Hey everyone, Jim Phoenix here, and today we're going cryptid, we're going Mako, we're going a bunch of stuff, MBAs, ABCs, 1-2-3s, all this and more of Robert Beto coming at you on this next What's Crackin'. Hit it. Hey everyone, Jim Phoenix here, and boy, I have a good one this week on What's Crackin'. I got none other than Robert Beto. And if you haven't seen anything about my shows, I think our original show was actually on cryptids. So this is very, very special for me to talk about someone who's written books on cryptids. And so Robert, I'm so glad to have you here. How have you been? How's your day?
Everything's fine in sunny San Diego now that the rains are done with. Yeah, it's wonderful outside. I was out at the beach this morning, and it's a beautiful day here. We're back to normal.
Back to normal? How bad was it? I saw a bit of the news.
Oh, the worst rains we've ever had, as long as I've lived here, as long as I've known the winter rains to happen. I mean, right. There was so much flooding that they had to open up shelters, and there were a lot of displaced people. Roads were closed. It was not what we're used to here.
I'm from Vegas, and we'll get the flash floods, but I'm guessing that was not just a couple hours worth of floods. It was days, or?
It was days, yeah. The rain was relentless. Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, thank God there's no global warming. Otherwise, that would suck.
But I think they're spinning it as, you know, part of that whole thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, probably.
Extreme climate events.
So, I think I've seen that movie. It was with John Cusack. Extreme climate events. I'm pretty sure it was an iceberg came in for that one. So when we're having from your background, could you go a bit about your background? Because I'm looking at these books. I see Mexican Monsters, Mexican Miracles, which I misread as Mexican Virgins. Different book. Mexico Unexplained, and The Coloring Book, which is very cool, by the way. And I see What My MBA Didn't Teach Me, 205 Lessons from Corporate America.
Well, all of those are related. The business book seems like it might be an outlier, but it's really connected to all of this. So given my background, I have an MBA, and I also have an MA in Latin American studies, and I combined the two, and I got a job with a big nameless, faceless company and was sent to their Mexico City headquarters. And then after that, I was sent to their headquarters in Brazil in Sao Paulo. And worked there, then was moved back to America and was working at the Financial Resource Center for this company in Phoenix, Arizona. And before that, I had experience in Mexico as a student, but all of this international business that I had in Mexico and Brazil, and I traveled all over, I decided to ditch corporate America in 1998, and then I started an imports business in 1999, and this year I celebrate 25 years in business. And what I do is I mostly import arts and crafts, handcrafted things, everything from little trinkets to furniture I've imported. And so what I've done is I always try to go to the little towns and villages to try to get unique stuff that you can't find anywhere else, because there are certain staples that you find, you know, in Mexican curio shops or whatever. And so I was pushing it and going to these, you know, little visited places. And while in the course of my travels, I would talk to people about different stories, local legends, you know, a UFO landed one time outside this village that I was in, and I almost went to the landing site, but that was a no-go. But so over the course of the 25 years of doing business, I came across all of these different stories and things. And what I noticed, and I remember the exact time that this happened, I was on a flight from Guadalajara to Phoenix. And I was reading a magazine, Mexican magazine, called Muy Interesante, and it's a paranormal themed magazine. And I was looking at it. I was, you know, getting into my seat, ready for the flight, flipping through the pages, and there were crop circles in some of the photographs. And there was an article about crop circles with the take from Mexican scientists. And then I was realizing, you know what? I haven't seen these pictures before. I haven't looked at this kind of analysis. And a lot of this stuff does not leave Mexico. And so that's when I decided to start my podcast, my YouTube channel, and then the series of books 8 years ago called Mexico Unexplained. And it's because, you know, who knows about the Sisimite? That's one of the two Bigfoot creatures in Mexico. Mexico has a counterpart for a lot of different paranormal or fringe topics, like, okay, two Bigfoot creatures. There's a Loch Ness monster type creature, and there's a Bermuda Triangle area. And no one knows about that outside the country. And I bring everything to the English speaking world.
You bring it. Okay, so you're going out into the small, because your business takes you at the time, right? Takes you to these small villages. Mm-hmm. And then when you were listening to stories, you are just, you know, naturally curious, because that's what we, you know, kind of are as a human being. And then you're like, I heard this, but not from this angle before. And I'm very curious on two things near to dear. One is what was the crop circle explanations that scientists in Mexico gave? Just curious what they gave the explanation.
They were giving analysis, but they weren't giving any explanations. So, and they were cornfields, which would make sense down there.
Right. That's very cool. Now, for Bigfoot, what's the Bigfoot? Because we know Sasquatch, Bigfoot, and then blank. What's the Mexican equivalent for Bigfoot?
Well, there are two different Bigfoot creatures. One is called the Sisimite, and that comes from a Nahuatl word, the Aztec word, Tzitzimitl, and that means people have interpreted that to be a type of demon. But this creature didn't even appear in the Aztec part of Mexico. It's in the Maya area, the jungles.
Really?
And his habitat supposedly ranges from the Yucatan and the Chiapas states of Mexico all the way down into El Salvador in Central America. And he's a skinny, kind of shy creature, covered in hair, hominid, whatever. And that creature was looked at as just a regular forest creature, like a puma or a turkey or some other, you know, just another animal,
right,
by the ancient Maya. And
oh, wow.
Okay, so that's the skinny, shy kind of Bigfoot creature. And that's in the jungle areas. Then we have the Coatlacas, and the Coatlacas is the big, buff, burly Bigfoot creature who lives in the mountains of central Mexico. And most people, when they think of Mexico, they think of Clint Eastwood movies and dusty desert towns and stuff. But there are four peaks in Mexico that have year-round glaciation. So there's a snowpack year-round. And there are park rangers on these mountains who have been trained in Switzerland for, you know, snow rescue and stuff like that. Okay. Alpine rescue. And that's something that people don't know about, you know, these snow-capped peaks. And hikers on these peaks have seen a Bigfoot-like creature like the North American Bigfoot. And there are parts of the state of Puebla that have only been explored since the 1860s because they're dense pine and oak forests. And people don't think of that either. I mean, Mexico, you pine forest? No, that doesn't come to mind. And so these big creatures have been spotted by people doing illegal logging, by squatters, because, you know, Mexico is a country that's growing in population. And people are pushing now into these areas that some believe are the traditional habitat of this big, burly Coatlacas. Now, between the Coatlacas' territory and the closest U.S. sighting of a Bigfoot, let's say in Texas, is about 1,000 miles, and most of that is mountains and desert. And so some people who have researched this believe that this Coatlacas is kind of a cutoff branch of the Sasquatch. Yeah.
Of the other ones. That's fascinating. I was wondering if it was going to be, if you see it in one area in one mythos, and if you see it somewhere else later on, there's multiple things that could happen. One is, it's just like, oh, we all see the Loch Ness Monster. You know, everyone's got a Loch Ness Monster. Everyone's got a Bigfoot now. Or as you're saying, it really is because one, just as migration happens or whatever, got cut off and started populating this different area. And I love how there's two different versions. And you bring up a lot of great points, because if most Americans close your eyes, you're going to describe Mexico as dusk to dawn. And that's it. Like, it might do like Tijuana or Cancun, you know, something that's going to be, or Cancun this year. You know, you're going to be doing something that's going to be spring breakish or dusk to dawn. The dusty, it's all like the dirt roads, which is, of course, not true.
Right.
But that's the only thing that it kind of,
Yeah. You don't think of glaciers. You don't think of deep pine forests that haven't been thoroughly explored. That never comes to mind.
No. And that'd be a great area for creatures to hide out in. And also, there has to be other creatures that are unexplained there. So you have the, I'm going to kill this word, Sisimita. How close was I?
Yeah, that's good. Yeah,
okay. Good. Oh, good for me. I can't get my own name right half the time, so I'm glad I got that one. And so you have this one. Do you have anything on, I'm going to definitely kill this name, and there's actually a Mike Tyson joke about him killing the name so much you can't say it, Chupacabra.
Well, yeah, the Chupacabra, that's a staple also, and it's in my Mexican Monsters book. That's a curious creature because it only really started to be sighted in Mexico in the 1990s. There are some cases now. Some people are saying that, the first case was sometime in the 60s, but we really didn't know. We couldn't identify it. But it became really popular in the 1990s. And the Chupacabra, or Chupacabras, sometimes there's an S on it. It literally means goat sucker, and it originated, the whole phenomenon came out of Puerto Rico first. Okay. And then from Puerto Rico, I mean, the legend traveled, or I don't know, is there a real creature? Is it mass hypnosis, you know, mass psychosis, whatever, but it became more prominent or more talked about, let's say, on the Christina show. Now, Christina was like the Latin American Oprah, and she had a talk show that was broadcast, I think, to more people than Oprah, because there are more people in Latin America than there are in the United States. So her show, it was called Christina, and bleach blonde, mustard blonde hair, Cuban woman broadcasting out of Miami. And she talked about the Chupacabra in the mid-90s, I think 1996 or something. Then all of a sudden, all of these sightings started happening. So that could be some psychological explanation, or it could be that people felt that it was okay to come forward and talk about this stuff. So there was a huge flurry of sightings in the 90s. It kind of died down. And recently, there's been other sightings of similar creatures. You know, it was popular right after that Christina show, but people aren't reporting as many sightings as they used to.
as they used to now, right? And this goes back to even if, right, so she has it on her show, it could be very well the green car syndrome. You buy that green car, no one else in the world has a green car until you bought it, now everyone's got it.
Right.
Like you just, yeah. You're starting to notice it because now you are aware of the green car, very physically and mentally aware of that green car, right?
Exactly.
And it could be people, you know, saying, oh, I've seen it or seen something like it. They just can't explain it. So they put the name to it. But what I don't think, and you can always correct me because you're the expert in this, not me. Correct me if I'm wrong. Where I grew up, there was a cryptid called the Hodag. That is purely fictional.
That's Wisconsin, right?
Yeah.
Rhinelander.
Like, Rhinelander, absolutely. Absolutely.
No way. Wisconsin. Are you from there?
About 45 minutes away from it. So like if people don't know Wisconsin, you have the cities and everything else is like in the middle of the country. Mm-hmm. It's like in the middle of the forest and stuff. And growing up, you see the whole day. And then later on, they're like, yeah, we tied like horns to like a goat or a dog and then we blew it up with dynamite. Like, oh, wow, that's depressing for that. So you already knew about the whole dag, huh?
Well, because I had an employee from Rhinelander and it was funny. And that was about 10 years ago. His name was Mark. And he worked as a bartender up there. And he told me there are a lot of bars because there's not much else to do but drink. And then it was really funny because in San Diego, like about 12 years ago, I was at the grocery store and a woman had a shirt on that said Hodag. And I said, are you from Rhinelander? And she said, yes, I am. She said, most people think it says ho dad instead of ho dag. And ho dad is a surfer term. That's somebody who doesn't belong on your beach. Yeah, a ho dad is someone who doesn't belong on your beach. Oh, and there's even a restaurant or, you know, a little restaurant and bar down in Pacific Beach in San Diego, ho dads. But I stopped her and she said, you're the first person to know. And I said, because I had an employee from there. But yeah, but it's interesting.
It's a small little world. And Mark's absolutely true. Growing up in the area, if you're old enough, you drank in the bars. Otherwise, it was in the middle of the forest or on a lake, on a frozen lake, burning tires. So our mileage may vary if it was like the fumes from the tires that are making us see things or if it actually existed. I don't know. But it's a small little world. You looked into that. And that's my point. It's going to be something that someone made up almost as a, you know, the logging camp, like the logging camp mythos or the logging camp mascot later on that became so popular. It became the town. It's the town mascot. Is there? Mm-hmm. Is
there's everyone's a festival t-shirt too?
Yeah, festivals. They even made like a small one on the way into town. Like here's a Hodag, home of the Hodags type thing. So you see that, and then you see where you don't see for other places. This is why I'm kind of in the camp where I believe in the other cryptids more because no one's trying to sell like this is the home of the da 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 da. And our high school and all 12,000 things, like that's more of a low key, a couple of locals might have seen it, depending. There might be something in living memory type of thing. Have you seen anything else that's kind of like when you explored, it turned out to be like, oh, this is 100%. Someone just made this up for, you know, tourism.
There's a lot of that going on in Mexico because people, it's interesting. The capitalism, the petty capitalism that happens when something goes on or there's a sighting or a UFO landing or whatever, all of a sudden people come out of the woodwork to start selling stuff. And whether it's balloons or churros or gorditas or, you know, other food items and stuff. And some people believe that a lot of these mysterious apparitions of, you know, the Virgin Mary, or in one case, I even wrote about it in the book, the Monsters book, about fairies being sighted in this certain area of Mexico. It turned out to be a hoax, and it was to try to draw people to that area. And they made a lot of money off of it, the local economy. They'll try to do things like that once in a while. And even I alluded to this at the beginning. I was in the back country of Michoacan. That's a state in central West Mexico. And I always hire drivers with trucks to take me around so I can buy things, and we load up the trucks and stuff. And we were in the back country, and we heard we were in a cafe getting lunch. We heard that there was a UFO landing site that was nearby. And I was like, cool, let's go. I want to go. And the guy on whose property the supposed burn mark was, you had to pay like 18 pesos in order to go and see it. And I was like, I told the driver, I said, I'll pay for your admission or whatever.
Yeah.
And the 18 pesos was like a little bit over a dollar or whatever at the time. And he was like, no, I'm afraid of the radiation. So I didn't go and get to see it because he was afraid of the radiation. He wouldn't take me. But you don't know if, you know, was that real? Was it an authentic burn landing site, or was it just somebody doing a hoax? Was it some other mystery? You know, it's hard to tell. Did Jesus really appear in a tortilla in that old lady's house? You know, it's all up to speculation.
I'm glad you brought that one up, because I know we're going through the books right now, and you have Mexican Monsters, the Cryptids and Legendary Creatures of Mexico, which is up on Amazon, and the Mexican Miracles, Virgin Saints and Shrines of Mexico, and which is a Kindle version, came out yesterday's. Yeah. Yes. And then I have so much, because growing up where I grew up, there was only one religion of choice. It was Catholic. And sometimes Lutheran, I guess. But it was the virgin sightings, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone is seeing Mary everywhere. And so did you go into that and look at the shrines and the saints and the sightings of in Mexico?
Yeah, sure. In the book, you'll find a whole section just devoted to virgin apparitions. Either the Virgin Mary appeared, or there's a statue or some other sort of likeness of the Virgin that has miraculous powers. And that's found throughout Mexico. It's like a local god. If you think about ancient Greece, you have like a local feminine deity. It's some version of the Virgin Mary that's venerated. And like I said, it could be an apparition, or it could be a statue that had miracles attached to it, you know, or some other image. Like, there's the Weeping Virgin of Monterrey, and it's a cuadra. It's a picture, and it's flat, it's framed, and it cries. You know, most virgins who cry are statues. And some cry blood, you know, that's very rare, but it's usually tears. This is on some flat picture, and you could turn it in the back, and, you know, people have examined it to see if there are hoses or some sort of water source going in, and they can't find anything. And, you know, so people are saying it's a miracle. And then the church is very cautious. The Catholic Church is very cautious to, you know, give their blessing or their verification of these supposed miracles. They're very cautious. Right. They don't just come in and say, yes, it is a miracle, and you know, we're going to ordain it as such. They err on the side of caution usually. Most people who aren't Catholic, they don't think that. They think the church goes in there and says, yes, this was really a miracle, but they're very cautious because they don't want these things to be taken lightly.
Taken lightly and made into moneymakers.
Right.
Because if everything's a miracle, like, oh, then what's not a miracle? And if everyone's special, you know, no one really is special. And then
everybody gets a trophy.
I know. When we're looking at this, I'm glad you brought up what the shrines used to be, not in all areas, but there were used to be shrines of Diana, you know, like the Virgin goddess. Then they just kind of map them up. Oh, we have a Virgin goddess too. We call her Mary. Cool. And that's how Christianity kind of like maps itself over existing religions. And I was wondering, probably not in Mexico because of the continental ability of it. It'd be funny if it turned out like, no, those were actually statues of Diana crying. And the real one, all these miracles are actually coming from this Greek goddess. Or the Roman, you know.
Or maybe, yeah. Okay, there are people who believe that, well, there's a lot of syncretism going on in Mexico, just like wherever Christianity has gone in the world, it blends with the local religion. Now, when the Spanish arrived, they were very outnumbered. There were huge civilizations that they came into contact with. And a lot of these very holy sites that are Catholic now used to be old Aztec sites or pilgrimage areas. Okay. For ancient people, and they were co-opted by the Catholic Church, by the friars who came in there. And that was to make the transition a little bit easier. And like I said, we see that all throughout the world. Our own Easter Bunny, you know, Ostara, all of that stuff. That was a blend of pagan and Roman Catholic. Same thing happened here in the New World in these larger civilizations. The biggest apparition of the Virgin of Guadalupe, it happened on a hill, Tepeyac, and there was an Aztec man who is now a saint, San Juan Diego. He saw the apparition of the Virgin, but that hill was already a pilgrimage site for a moon goddess, Tonantzin. And so that made everything a lot easier. People started to convert more rapidly to Christianity,
right?
Because this feminine goddess type, you know, feminine deity appeared in this place, which was already a pilgrimage site.
Right. It's a bit of the All Souls, All Saints, All Halloween, you know, that conglomerate, like, oh, we have one like this. We have one like this. Let's combine them.
Right. And Day of the Dead in Mexico.
Right. Exactly.
Day of the Dead in Mexico is the same thing. All Souls Day, yeah. All Saints Day. There was an Aztec death holiday in the springtime. And then the Spanish said, okay, well, let's take this, co-opt it, move it to a more appropriate place on our calendar. So this springtime festival where they made skulls out of cornmeal and blood was moved to the 1st and 2nd of November and became Days of the Dead, Dia de los Muertos. Right. And instead of skulls made out of cornmeal and blood, they started to make sugar skulls. And I sell the equipment to make that, those sugar skulls in my business, and all of the other Day of the Dead stuff that you could possibly imagine. Over the 25 years that I've been in business, I've trafficked in a lot of Day of the Dead merchandise. It's very, very popular.
That is very cool. And I did check out your site. And I was like, because I didn't stay in Mexico. I didn't stay in Wisconsin the entire time. But a lot of the stuff I miss from Vegas is going to be from Mexico. Mm-hmm. That's why I saw your website. I'm like, oh, I know. My friends are. I mean, we used to have this. We used to have this. Not no more. We used to have this. And I like how you're bringing it into a new culture, into a new era, honestly. Because these are the books, like I said, I grew up with these types of books with the cryptids and like the miracles books and unexplained books. And now you bring it from a different voice and putting it into an area into English. So you're taking the original stories and you're giving them a voice in a new market, which is brilliant to see. And we have Mexico Unexplained, the magic mysteries and miracles of Mexico. If you are going to give me one of the miracles. We talked a bit about the virgins and the saints and the shrines. Is this the same type of miracle? Is there a different type? Like, what's the biggest miracle coming out from that book?
Well, I would say the biggest one would have to be what I've already talked about, is the Virgin of Guadalupe, mm-hmm. because it's one of the biggest, the most popular shrines in the entire world. If you ever go there, you'll see nuns from Vietnam. You'll see priests from France or Africa. The whole world is there. And so that's huge. So that would be probably the biggest one that I would say. And it's, you know, front and center in the book.
Right. As it should be. I mean, that was one of the ones I grew up with. The Catholic Church, you're right. They don't really like say, oh, this is obviously a miracle, whatever it is. And even when it was a miracle, or they'll try to quote unquote confirm a sighting, right? They like, well, we confirm this sighting. Sure. Sometimes the Pope would at the time would say, but I can't tell you all of it. It was like a cliffhanger. The Pope would do cliffhangers. That was mm-hmm. the Metagora that was like, oh, we have all these prophecies, but the children told it to me only. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you these because the Virgin Mary said not to tell anyone else. But you have to do all these other things. You have to eat your vitamins, work out, and say your prayers. Oh, wait, that was Hulk Hogan. Sorry, that was Hulk Hogan. I get the Pope and Hulk Hogan confused sometimes. So the Pope probably said to be good to everyone. I don't know. Or these bad things will happen. That's what the whole thing is. And so was there any type of sighting where it was like, if you do not make amends, bad things will happen and kill you all?
That's a very interesting question. Not that I can recall. I mean, everything has been, you know, like joyful or hopeful. There hasn't been any of that sort of thing. Although, if you want to go down a darker path, this month, the first Satanic temple is going to open in a place called Catemaco in the state of Veracruz in Mexico. And there are alternative religions that have been popping up lately to challenge the power of the Catholic Church that are more on the dark side. So, but the traditional virgin sightings and everything, they're never admonishing or, you know, shaking their fingers at people and saying, you better, you know, sit up straight and obey. It's none of that. Which is interesting. You know what? I've never thought of it from that angle, but it's interesting. In Mexico, we do not see that sort of thing coming from these
other places,
apparitions.
The other places, they're all like warnings.
Yeah,
like you're on the wrong path.
It's all hopeful and that's, you know, cool. It makes people feel good and all of that stuff. Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought of it from that perspective, but yeah.
Well, that's why I like having conversation, because I can talk to myself about this and I wouldn't have known that these were all hopeful things, because that was one of the things I still ingrained in me as a kid, like hearing about it and now having the internet at your fingers. You can do more research than as a kid in no library, just bars around you. And you go, oh, well, that was the whole thing. That sounds horrific. Like, that's what they said? Oh, wow. Okay. We're just told like that Russia's going to kill us. Oh, I guess, you know, not too late for that yet. But eventually, one day that one may or may not be true. But it's like the whole, it was weird because it was like a Cold War. Like the Virgin Mary comes by and basically says, by the way, the Cold War is happening. And then get really hot if you wanted to. But it's really nice in Mexico. I like that. I like the nicer, the miracles. Now, has the church ever gone, no, that's not a miracle, and then had to come back and say, our bad, yes, it was? Do you know of any instance where they kind of went back on their own word?
No, not that I can recall, no.
They say it and they move on.
They've been very, very cautious in granting miracle status to a lot of this stuff. So there have only been some instances, there were some major virgin statues that have been crowned and have been, you know, sanctified, visited by popes and things like that. But there hasn't any, I guess, haven't been any statues that have been defrocked or decommissioned. So, yeah.
That's cool. Now, switching gears, because I'm looking at the Mexican Monsters, the coloring book. Speaking of Chupacabra, see, I almost said it for the first time the correct way, and then after that, Chupacabra, goat sucker, got it. As soon as you said that, it breaks down in my mind. I'm like, oh, you're right. Those are just two words smashed together. Mm-hmm. Why can't I say these words?
That
it's on the cover, though, right? It's on the cover for your Mexican Monsters. Is that a
Chupacabra? Exactly, yes. It's on the cover, and there are two versions of the Chupacabra. Okay,
there's really?
The Puerto Rican version, the one that was originally discussed on Cristina, that show, was this creature that is almost like half reptile, half mammal with spikes on its back and has more reptilian characteristics. Then there are other versions of the Chupacabra that are more like big wolf creatures, you know, gigantic, hairy, sometimes walking upright. And so there are two different versions of what this creature looks like, but they're the way they attack animals and their habitat, the way they act, how they behave, that's similar, but people have seen two different types.
That's interesting, because I grew up, well, besides the Hodag, I grew up with the Jersey Devil myth, you know, like, oh, it's the Jersey Devil, and then like all these little other cryptids. And sometimes the description was similar, and sometimes they change, but I never think they'll change that much. Do you think they're two different animals that happen to have the same man-given name because that's, you know, they're destroying the livestock, basically?
I think so, yeah. I mean, if we're going to believe in these creatures, they're probably two separate creatures that have the same way of attacking their prey, sucking the blood usually out of the neck of the creature.
Yeah, and isn't that the scariest? And that's the part where they make them scary for cryptids. It's they're never like, oh, I was walking down the boulevard in Las Vegas one day, or downtown San Diego. No. It's you're alone. It's the middle of the woods. Bad, frightening things can happen. And you can see this or not, like the Chupacabras or not, or you can see something that's going to come out or not. And it's like the fear of the unknown that can hype up your senses and have your imagination fill in the blanks. So even if this is not exactly like it, I think the experiences might be real to that person, and what they saw, like their imagination, we'd have to fill the rest in because we're too scared to take anything else in at that point, right? We're just trying to run away or live. And then to see the aftermath of it, I think that's telling for this particular cryptid. Is the aftermath of it. Isn't that like the Bigfoot ones, the CC Metas? I think I might be getting this one. Mita, not Meta. Where there's not like, destroyed entire, you know, rampage, five bears. They found bear limbs somewhere. You know, it doesn't really have that aspect of it where the Chupacabra is like, no, this killed a bunch of things.
Right.
And you can see the aftermath of that. Where a coyote probably wouldn't eat this way, especially through the blood, or a wolf wouldn't tear it apart this way. Wild dogs wouldn't act this way. And the only thing you have left is human. Like, you either can believe in this cryptid or some sociopath, like tearing apart.
Right. There was actually a site where there were a whole bunch of dead animals across a couple of farms. And some people blamed mad scientists. And it's funny, when things go paranormal in Mexico, a lot of times people blame NASA for some reason, the space agency in the United States, NASA. They say it's NASA conducting experiments. whether it's a crashed UFO or this sort of thing. In fact, in the town in northern Mexico that I'm referring to, people claim that these were scientists doing experiments, NASA scientists or CIA, right, something connected to the United States. Right. But in Mexico, there's a lot of blame for the United States for a lot of things. Oh, the price of tortillas are high. Oh, it's the fault of the United States. So all of these things go back to us. Which
probably might be true for that one, by
the way. It could be. Yeah, right. You're right.
That was probably true. That was probably true. Yeah, but we see that a lot, though, right? We see it in the United States. We see it in Mexico, Russia. I have people who live in Russia. They see it as well, where it's like, oh, it's their fault. Mm-hmm. They're doing some kind of weird experimentations. Mm-hmm. And that's what this is, right? Yeah. So do you believe it, though?
Well, I tell people I really don't believe in anything. You have to prove it to me. With a lot of these creatures, I have my own little theories and stuff, but if I can't prove it, then I'm not going to say this is what it is or this is what it isn't. I'm pretty skeptical when it comes to this stuff. People automatically think that because I'm presenting this information that I believe in everything. And I've gotten really railed by people. Even a member of my family came down from another town in California to do an intervention with me because he thought I was going off the rails with believing in aliens and UFOs. And I was like, you know, you need to listen to my show and listen to the disclaimer at the beginning, because every show has a disclaimer at the beginning that it's not necessarily what I personally believe, and it's not necessarily the truth or the complete story. And the viewer, the listener, can make up his or her own mind on what is what. And so, yeah, I don't assume anything. So it was from
Santa Barbara, right?
I'm sorry?
The person was from Santa Barbara, right?
No, Bakersfield.
Oh, jeez. Oh, jeez. I was thinking of my geography in California. I'm like, what does it sound like my friends would say that? Oh, that's Santa Barbara. Bakersfield, I can see that too. They have a gas station now. Bakersfield's got a gas station now.
Sorry. But I was like, what are you doing this for? What are you doing this for? You know, listen to my stuff. You've never even watched any of my things. I present a lot of stuff, and some of it I do think that it could be true, but a lot of it, it's just a fantastic story. I love telling these stories, and I love sharing this stuff with people. But that's what I'm here to do. And I've learned an incredible amount by doing all this.
And I think you hit it on the head. It's going to be presenting it as a, not so much, this is absolutely true, this must be it. It's going to be presenting it as, this is what you found. This is what you found. This is what it could be. You're presenting it as a scientist. You're not making definitive claims that this exists or not. It's having that reasonable doubt saying, well, this is what I'm hearing. Here's the evidence.
Yeah.
You know, I still need to get more.
There's certain cryptids that I talk about in my book that I'm inclined to believe are real. There's one called the lechuza. It's a gigantic owl creature, and it's mixed with legend. I mean, the legend part of it is a witch, it's the same story with a lot of these shape-shifting creatures, a marginalized woman who lives outside of town, is scorned and bullied as a little girl, whatever, turns to the dark arts, and then she gets involved with witchcraft. And so in this lechuza story, this witch turns into a gigantic owl and then goes and swoops down and attacks people, takes your dog, you know, and does all of these other things. And then if you shoot it, then it dies. And then when it falls to the ground, it turns into this woman again. Okay, that's the legend. But people have been seeing these gigantic owl creatures across northern Mexico mostly, and even in the southwestern United States, the Rio Grande Valley of Texas, lots of sightings. If you go to my YouTube channel and you look up that Lechuza show, you read the comment section and you have tons and tons, like 100, 200 stories from people. I even got invited by someone who lives in a Rio Grande City in southern Texas to go on a Lechuza hunt to go and look for the creature. So there's a part of me that's saying that what is this gigantic bird-like creature that is only in the northern part of Mexico? If people are seeing it and they don't even know anything about the legend or whatever, then what is it? Is it a real animal? Now, in northern Mexico, there are a lot of deserted areas in the mountains and the deserts that could be a habitat for a creature. You know, you were saying something about that earlier. You know, there could be different creatures that live in these unexplored areas. And there's a lot of Mexico that's just flyover country, we would say, in the United States. It could be the habitat of a gigantic bird that we don't know about.
And that's amazing, because there are so many different aspects. From a U.S.-centric point of view, we grew up with, like, Woodsy the Owl. Woodsy the Owl, or even the you know, like, and they're supposed to be the very wise owls, like Winnie the Pooh, you know, owl right there. Other cultures, owls are like demons. We forget, like, other cultures exist, and then, like, owls actually do not mean, like, the nice, wise, benevolent creature. It means things that will kill you and your family, your dog. You know, like the stories, the babies and stuff like that. And there was a lot like unexplained territory. There really is. It's why I think, if you even go back to the ones for the Hodag, why that myth lasted so long, because northern Wisconsin is one big massive, cornfield and just a forest. Like, there's stuff that we just don't know. Of course, didn't go in there. And it's like the hunting down of it all. Now, I will bring this into a point.
Okay.
Because I when I was doing my quick research, I saw the MBA book. The MBA book. You said that was the first thing, like, your MBA kind of launches the rest of it. When you started your MBA, did you ever think you have a career in doing Mexico Unexplained?
No, not at all. But that's how life goes. Doesn't life go that way? I mean, we put ourselves on a path, and then we have the best intentions. We stick to it, and then things happen along the way. You see new opportunities. You see things that interest you or fascinate you. And then you go down another path, or in this case, you might want to use the overused cliche rabbit hole, right? You go down that rabbit hole, this little path, whatever. And then you look back and you say, how did I get here? But that's life. You have all these plans and intentions, and never really ends up the way you think it's gonna end up.
No, and you have to roll with it. Otherwise, you'll be taken away by a gigantic owl creature who might or may not be a woman. When you're telling that story, I'm like, I teach a story similar for a witch doctor, and if you look at it on his face, it's either a story about these brave kids fending off their house from a witch doctor and killing the witch doctor, or they just murder someone's grandma. like if you don't believe in witch doctors, you just murder some old woman. If you believe in witch doctors, you did a good thing. If you believe in witches, you might have just, you know, saved a village. If you don't really believe in witches, you might have also just shot a species.
Right.
You know, like, and just might have shot an owl or hunted down the women, as we kind of already went through the witch trials, where it was kind of the, you have land? Oh, you have land. Oh, you're speaking out against people? Well, you were speaking out against people. Not no more. We have a new test for you. If you float, if we tie ropes or tie rocks around you, sink. Oh, boy. this has been fun. I love this stuff. As a little kid, this is my jam. And then you're on YouTube with at Mexico. I don't have my glasses on.
Mexico Unexplained. And Mexico anybody Unexplained who wants to, right, anyone who wants to, you know, start off looking at this stuff, getting into it, you can go to MexicoUnexplained.com. And then there are several launching off points. You can go to the YouTube. You can look at all the transcripts of the shows are there for free. You can buy an autographed book by me, you know, through the site. And there's merch too there. But I love hearing from people, especially people who have spent time in Mexico, Mexican Americans who, you know, the border is kind of fluid. And people, a lot of times, who are adults, they spent summers with grandma in a tiny little village somewhere. Those are some of the best stories that I hear from people. You know, it's like, yeah, I was born in California, but then, you know, every summer we went to visit grandma in Santa Maria del Pulque, Oaxaca, a tiny little town, whatever. And there was some two-headed creature that lived in a cave there, you know, and the legend goes back 2,000 years. I want to hear stuff like that. So I love engaging with the audience in the comments section and people who contact me with stories. I always follow up and it's wonderful.
I love stories like that. And I love where I can go see, because I'm looking at the Exploring the Mysteries of La Venta and that huge head. You know, I love seeing like, oh my God, like how old it was. And just, it's, I'm like an archaeology geek sometimes, and just being able to go, I didn't know that existed there. Now I can go visit it. I love it just for that. And for you putting the stuff out, like, oh, I didn't know that this is the, that's my cat says, I didn't know this is the background story. I bet I can go down there and figure this out for myself, or try to get explore this more for me. Like my friends from Chihuahua, I didn't know like La Casa de los Chinos. I didn't know the seven little heads. I didn't know any of this stuff. And his entire family's from Chihuahua. It's like, they didn't talk about this.
Well, you know, but it's funny too. It's funny. Some of these legends are very specific to certain regions. And, you know, even in these states, some people will tell me, you know, hey, I'm from Chihuahua, let's say, or I'm from Tlaxcala. And I never heard this before, because a lot of times the legends are so localized that don't even make it outside of the region that they're from. Like one example, one brief thing was the Tlahuelpuchi. It's a blood-sucking witch. And that witch became known outside of the little villages in the town of Tlaxcala, because someone in Tlaxcala City in the 1950s, a government functionary was looking at death certificates, and it said cause of death, chupado por la bruja, sucked by the witch. And so he went to his superiors, this young, you know, 20 something, you know, paper pushing government guy, ambitious, you know, went to his boss and said, look, what is this cause of death, chupado por la bruja? So then they sent investigators to these little towns, and they said, well, there's this Tlahuelpuchi, a woman who will turn into a fly through your keyhole, then appear in over your baby, suck the baby's blood, and then leave your home. So someone from that state of Tlaxcala, even though it's one of the smallest states in Mexico, may not even know about this example. Yeah, because it's so localized.
But that's there's a lot of amazing parts of that. One is like, it's actually the cause of death.
That's like listed in it. Chupado por la bruja. God. Yeah.
That's of all the things I've seen on different certificates, I didn't think it would be that one. But that just goes to show you the strength of the lore, strength of the crypt, strength of believing. And we do all these things. And it's going to be a matter of, can we as a society, maybe we as a human race, be able to say, I don't know everything. I have doubt. And that doubt means you can then talk about cryptids. You can then talk about the unexplained. And that's more so you have to believe or not, but you're not automatically saying no.
You know,
say, I want to know more.
It's, I think it's okay to have a sense of wonder and not to be so definitive and say this, it's this or that. It's okay to say, you know, I don't know. It's just, it's fine. It's all right.
I like the sense of wonder. I like the sense of wonder. And oh, wow. We talked for almost an hour. So thank you very much, Robert Brito. And we've got Mexican monsters, the cryptids and legendary creatures of Mexico. We got Mexican miracles, virgin saints and shrines in Mexico. Mexico Unexplained, which is also your YouTube channel. The magic mysteries and miracles of Mexico. And the coloring book, which I'm jealous because I know who I'm already getting that for. I love it. I guess I should not have said that on my podcast because they'll know they're getting it too. Well, that's on me. Some mysterious person might be getting that for their birthday, I guess. And I love, and this is the one I'm going to have to cover, what my MBA didn't teach me, 205 lessons from corporate America, which is itself could be a horror story. So it all kind of works in, especially today.
Yes, it was a horror story. That's why that's why I've been my own business owner for 25 years. I ditched corporate America. And so, yeah, never again am I going to get a job.
Good for you. I'm glad for that. So thank you very much. Thank you for your time. And thank you. If you want to give the young readers and audience, and even no matter how old they are, but if you want to give them one piece of advice, what would it be?
Stay curious. And, you know, investigate, do what you love. And that's pretty much it.
That's amazing. I like that. Stay curious and you will live longer. Bye, everyone.
Thanks.